This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Hello, welcome along. Switch on your brains, turn them up loud. My name's Dan, and this is the Fun Kids Science Weekly. It's the only show around that takes the sneakiest peek at all the secrets of the universe. Now this week, we'll learn about one mysterious fish's mega journey through the ocean. Also, we'll talk about an insect with the most brutally evil and devastating name that you could ever imagine. That's on the way. And I've got some shout-outs to do and some questions to answer. If you've left us a review on Apple Podcasts, I might say hello in just a sec. First, let's help our alien mates get back home. This is NNG.
NNG's Meter Motivator.
Hey guys, you know all about energy, right?
No, we are energy.
Possessors of all the knowledgeable in the nebula, no less. So what's up?
Well, I understand where our energy comes from and that we're using more than ever. If I'm going to be a meter motivator, I need to know more about how a smart meter can help.
Ah, great question. It's all to do with preventing waste.
You sound like my gran. She hates wasting anything, least of all energy. Always telling me to put a jumper on instead of turning up the heating.
Are you sure she's not one of the think wranglers from Cerebra 9? She sounds awfully clever for an earthling.
That might explain a lot. So what's that got to do with a smart meter?
Smart meters can help you see how much energy you're using, how and when. Which is good when you use as much as humanoids do. From the splishy-washy machine to your play tablets, your homes use more energy than ever before.
But you earthlings don't have Ultima Galactic infinite power drives like we do, so it's important to be in control.
Smart meters help you take control and to only use the energy you need.
But how? They're just a little panel thing on the wall. Doesn't look very helpful to me.
You might be surprised at what you find out. Imagine, in the middle of the night, the house is quiet. You might think you're saving energy. But no, electrical appliances on standby still use energy. Smart meters can help you track your usage to find out things like that, to show you where you could make changes.
Like switching off all the gadgets.
I get it. Like where we keep a food journal at school. It helped us to see where we can make better choices.
And the information smart meters capture will help power companies to get the energy to where it's needed and when. This could mean cheaper electricity at certain times of the day when demand is lower.
Very smart.
Almost as smart as your old grandperson. And meter motivators like you are pretty smart too. Almost as smart as a think wrangler.
Using less energy is great for the environment and can help prevent waste. And knowing where you are wasting energy means you could start using that energy for something else, like more hot baths.
Gran loves a bath. She says it's how she recharges her batteries.
Watch out! Looks like we're gonna fuse, G! Time for us to pop!
Here it comes, whoopee! I love a bit of fusion. See ya, kid!
Bye, energy, and thanks!
Here it comes!
I got a fantastic question here from Harvey, who is 7. Harvey, thank you so much for leaving this as a review over on Apple Podcasts. He asks, what do atoms look like? I've never given it much thought, you know, Harvey. The truth is, I don't really know, but what I'll do for you, I'll get a proper expert in the field, like a chemist or a physicist, to come on the show, hopefully in the next few weeks, and sort that out for you. Thank you so much for letting us know. Also, hello to Grace in Australia, who asks, is water easy to find in the desert? Well, the simple answer, Grace, is no. Not really. That's why they call it a desert. A desert is considered a desert if there's less than 250 millilitres of rainfall in the year. Now, you live in Australia, down under, Grace, which is one of the hottest places on the planet. Last year, you got an average of 400 millilitres of rain in the year. It's not a lot, which is why there are some deserts in Australia. Deserts, they cover more than one-fifth of the land on the Earth. You find them on every continent. There's the Sahara, the Mojave, the Patagonian Desert. Now, we know there's not a lot of water in these places because of the life that can live there. The only life that lives. Think of the cactus. You know, the thin spikes that it has. It's got little surface area on these because there's no water to suck up. They don't need huge leaves because it's not like it's raining all the time. Also, think about the camels. They've got those huge humps on their back where they store fat to give them the energy to keep walking for days and days to go and find water. So, Grace, no, there's not a lot of water in the desert, but thank you so much for the question. If you've got something sciencey in your brain that you need answered by an expert, you need to leave it for the Fun Kids Science Weekly as a review over on Apple Podcasts. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, recently, parts of the UK have been devastated by wildfires. Horrible destruction that you would think should be reserved for the summer when everything's hot, right? But they're happening in winter, and I want to know why. So I've got Dr. Thomas Smith, an assistant professor from the London School of Economics, on the phone, a little bit of a wildfire expert. He can help tell us why. Thomas, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Now,
good morning.
We should start just specifically, this might be a stupid question, but outline for us what a wildfire actually is.
Well, a wildfire is a fire that gets out of control in the outdoors. And in the UK, that could mean in a park, it could mean in a national park, or it could be in someone's back garden. That'll probably be a way of describing it.
Now, you say out of control. I guess, how do they start normally? And what kind of conditions do we need to see for them to get out of control?
Yeah, out of control is the important thing here, because at this time of the year, it's quite normal for us to see fires burning on the landscape, especially in the north of England and in Scotland as well, where farmers will be setting fire to parts of their land on purpose. And this is a way of stopping vegetation from getting too overgrown. And often this is managed very well, and the fires are kept under control. And they might set these fires using what we call drip torches, which is kind of like a fire lighter, which they carry around their fields lighting fires. But what can happen, and what happened last week, is that when the weather is very dry, and it had been dry for about a week, and when the temperatures are quite warm, the vegetation dries out, and that leads to a situation where the fires can get out of control if they're not managed very well. And some of these fires, I'm afraid, were probably set on purpose, and we call that arson.
So this is similar to what would have devastated California last year, almost months of just constant flames and fires. Are they becoming more frequent?
That's a really good question. I mean, the fires that we saw last week were probably quite different to what we see in California. The severity, what we mean by that is how hot the fire is burning and how much damage it does to the land is very different. The fires last week probably didn't cause a huge amount of damage to the soil and the seeds that lie in the soil so that the plants can grow back. The fires in California were very severe and caused a lot more damage. As far as whether these things are going to happen more frequently in future, we think the answer to that is yes, unfortunately. We know that we're living in a world that's getting warmer with global warming and climate change. And in a warmer world, things are going to be drier. And we'll see situations like we saw last week happening more frequently in the future.
So is that, I mean, you said earlier that the reason that these fires really did take off last week is because the ground was drier. Why was it drier, very simply? Is it just because the world's getting a bit more hotter?
Last week it was probably the weather. You know, it had been a dry week. It was very, very warm, unusually warm, and we know that it was pretty strange how warm it was last week. And what that did to the air is it dried the air out, and we call this relative humidity, and that got very, very low to around 30%, and that's quite unusual for this time of year. And it was the small leaves and twigs that don't really have much vegetation on them at this time of year dried out and were available to burn.
Now, if climate change in the future is we looking like being to blame for more wildfires, is there the other end of the scale? Is there, you know, an extremely cold weather condition that possibly geography experts like yourself are expecting?
Well, we expect there to be more extreme weather. And what that means is extreme heat. And we could say that last week was rather extreme for February. It certainly broke all of the records for the warmest winter day on record. But we also expect there to be more cold events as well. And when it comes to wildfire, though, that's probably not going to do us much help, to be honest. It's the extreme warm events that are also going to happen at the same time that are going to be driving wildfire behaviour in places like the UK and the rest of northern and western Europe as well.
Now, these extreme heat events like wildfires, do they have any other repercussions in both the short and long term? Because I'm sure that our air, the atmosphere, isn't really set up for billowing flames and loads of smoke happening all the time. Are we expecting things to change in terms of air pollution?
Yeah, this is a really big problem in the UK. If we think of Canada or Australia, places that also have lots of wildfires, they're often far away from human populations. And the problem with the UK is that, you know, we have quite a densely populated island, lots of people living close to where these fires are happening. And so we see smoke from these fires getting into urban areas, into cities and into towns, and that's driving bad air quality. And we advise people when that happens, and this happened last year near Manchester, people need to stay indoors and close their windows. But that's quite difficult to do when it's a really warm, hot summer's day like it was last year.
Now, if these things are likely to happen more often, like we saw in February, do you anticipate us being better at dealing with it? Maybe we're quicker to get the fire brigade on board. Maybe we know how to temper wildfires better in the future.
Yeah, we have one of the best fire and rescue services in the world, I think. And the firefighters that I've been working with as part of my research and part of my job often travel to other parts of the world that experience wildfires to be trained on how to deal with wildfires here in the UK. So there's already initiatives, already plans to help train UK firefighters to fight these problems that are actually quite a new issue for many firefighters. They might not have had to have dealt with a wildfire before. But a lot of them are going to Spain, or they're going to South Africa, or they're going to California, and they're being trained how to fight these fires. So hopefully we're a little bit better prepared for the future.
Fantastic. All right. Dr. Thomas Smith, thank you so much for joining us on the Fun Kids Science Weekly.
Thanks.
On the Fun Kids website this week, there's a brand new series all about the Internet of Things. Technomum is going to be telling us all about how your iPad talks to your car, or your house, or your body. Plus, there's a chance to win a nature kit, an Amazon smart speaker, and loads more. Just visit funkidslive.com on your computer, phone, or tablet.
Now, when you think about it, we've learned about quite a few insects on the show who are said to have the most painful sting in the world. I'm not sure if anyone really knows the true answer, but here's another one to chuck into the pile, and it's worth being included on our Dangerous Dan list simply because of the name. Check this out. Let me introduce you to the Executioner Wasp. Now, its scientific name is Polistes carnifex. It's found in Central and Southern America, so that's Mexico right down through Argentina and Chile. And it's a huge thing, a gigantic wasp. It's yellow and brown. It's quite a light colour. It's got evil green-looking eyes, and it's long, with quite big wings too to keep it up. Now, because it's so big, it preys on larger creatures than itself. It's one of the only insects that really does this efficiently, regularly feeding on caterpillars and other insects that are bigger. Now, it's not an aggressive wasp species, but many locals in Latin America who live in the same place as the executioner wasp say that the sting is the most brutal and the single most painful experience that you can have. People are stung. Report that the pain lasts for a day and a half. It almost immobilizes your arm, stops you from using it. It leaves a rotting patch of skin and flesh where the wasp left its mark. So it's mean, it looks evil, it's devastatingly painful, and with a name like the Executioner Wasp, it has to be included in our Dangerous Dan list. Time to get your gadget questions answered now by our geeky guru. This is Technomum.
Technomum, engineering explorers.
I love chocolate. Perhaps the best job in the world might be someone who gets to invent delicious new snacks and sweets. Or maybe actually testing them would be the best job.
Wow, you've polished off the lot. I thought you were going to save a couple for me.
So, here's what I've been thinking, Mum. If engineers make stuff and come up with inventions, is there an engineering job where you can invent new types of chocolate?
You mean like Willy Wonka?
I know. Pretty unlikely. He's just a character in a book.
Yay, not so fast. Some engineers do invent new foods and drinks, and they don't even need Oompa Loompas to help.
Ha ha, very funny, Mum.
No, no, I'm serious. They're chemical engineers.
Chemical engineers?
Well, think about it. Everything's made of chemicals. And if you know how to change and combine chemicals, you can make all sorts of new substances.
Sounds like being a wizard. Alchemy.
It's not magic, but it's very cool. Chemical engineers design and develop all sorts of products, from food and drink to toiletries and medicines. If a chemical engineer works for a food company, they might be making new flavours. Or if they work for a company that makes toiletries or cleaning products, perhaps they'll be making a biodegradable type of soap that causes less harm to the environment. In fact, the number of jobs that chemical engineers do is almost as varied as the amount of chemicals we use. New medicines, new types of plastics, perhaps from recycled bottles, high-tech materials to help make cars, planes, and even rockets lighter and faster. Whilst a lot of chemical engineers' work is in laboratories, some will work with computers and IT to analyse the results of experiments. Check out this video. It shows some really exciting stuff that's being done by a chemical engineer in Africa. This is Asquar Hilonga. He's a chemical engineer from Tanzania. In some parts of his country, it's hard to find clean water to drink, and so frequently people become ill and even die. He invented a water filter which uses sand and nanotechnology to filter impurities out. Anything from copper and fluoride to bacteria, viruses and pesticides.
That's brilliant! I suppose knowing how different substances affect each other helped him to figure out what to put in his filter.
That's right. And it's a much cheaper way to clean water thoroughly so more people can use it.
Cool job! And a bit more important than making new chocolates, I suppose.
There are loads of cool jobs for engineers. Almost as many jobs as there are inventions. And hey, there's always room for chocolate.
Couldn't agree more.
Or there would be room for chocolate if you'd left me some.
Engineering Explorers, created with support from the Institution of Engineering and Technology to celebrate the Year of Engineering. Find out more at funkidslive.com/technomum.
Let's have a look at all the science that has been in your news this week. A rare fish thought to live in the southern hemisphere has washed up on the shores of California. The 2-metre-long hoodwinker sunfish has baffled experts. They've no clue how it made it so far from home, where they're normally found near Australia. Now, the fish was only discovered in 2014, and it's already causing a fuss. Also, Canada will contribute over $1 billion to a proposed NASA space station. It's called Gateway, and it'll aim to act as a base to help astronauts land on the moon's surface. And hopefully it's good to go by the mid-2020s. And finally, about 100 bird species are predicted to go extinct if we carry on treating the world as we do now. The biggest factor in the destruction is the cattle farming, which fells loads of forest, as does deforestation caused by palm oil. Now, 140 birds have been lost over the last 100 years, so 100 bird species going really soon. It's a huge deal. Those numbers are expected to rise rapidly. And that is it for this week on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. Remember, if you subscribe to the podcast, wherever you get your shows from, you won't need to move a muscle to listen to us again next week. Everything will download automatically to your phone or tablet. Now, if the place where you get your podcasts from is over on Apple Podcasts, I'd love you to leave us a review. Drop us 5 stars. Find the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Let me know your name on there as well. There's a comment box on the bottom, and in there, you can write any science question that you got. Either I will answer it, or I'll find a proper niche expert in the field to sort it out for you. Also, while you're on Apple Podcasts, it's one of the best places that you can listen to all the brilliant science series that we do on Fun Kids. You've heard some of them today. We've got loads more ones where we travel back through time and travel through your body as well. You can also hear them on the free Fun Kids app, and we're at funkidslive.com. And you can listen to Fun Kids all over the UK on your DAB digital radio. You can also find us across the world on the free Fun Kids app and over at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.